At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome, welcome back to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. I am Zoe Flowers, and you know this is where we have conversations about grief, courage, and transformation. And so I usually start the conversations with a reading from a book, but this time we're starting with a reading from the Tarot. And this is very interesting as we step into this conversation with Jeff Gerken. So the first card I got was the Ace of Pentacles, and the second card I got was the Nine of Pentacles. And the Ace of Pentacles are about gifts from the universe. Pentacles are about resources. Pentacles are about creating something that we want to last. And the Nine of Pentacles is when we are in that process of looking over what we've created, the resources that we've gathered. And I feel like the Nine of Pentacles is a midway point between two ways of being with regards to resources. The Nine of Pentacles is almost like a crossroads where we have a choice. Do we advance in the things that we have created, in the life that we've created, moving towards that Ten of Pentacles, that ultimate legacy? Or do we feel not quite ready to step into that? And so we go back to the Eight of Pentacles, where we still have to have hard work. And so I guess the meaning of this message today is about the universe, God, the divine, is presenting us with an opportunity to gain new resources. That can be financial, it could be spiritual, it could be relational. The universe is inviting us to, and is constantly inviting us to, I'm going to use the word advance. And we have the choice. Do we go forward to the ultimate, or do we go backwards? So I guess this call today, Jeff, this conversation is about being at the crossroads and making decisions on whether to go forward, to stay in the same place, or even to go backward. And maybe this conversation is the microcosm of the macrocosm, right? It's Jeff and I, and then there's all of you out there listening. And maybe we're all at the crossroads together. So Jeff Gerken is an advocate, a healer, an oracle reader, and co-founder of Query. And Jeff knows what it means to carry secrets for decades and the courage to move towards that Ten of Pentacles, move towards that legacy building. His story begins in the South, shaped by growing up in a religious family, experiencing sexual trauma at the age of 5, and struggling for years with his sexuality, getting married, becoming a father, and then deciding to come to terms with just living his life fully in his power and leading into this spiritual journey, this spiritual awakening that he is on now. So Jeff is going to talk openly about his journey, his advocacy, and how spirituality has transformed his healing. So Jeff, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. How are you arriving today?
I am arriving in a good space. I'm confident. I'm embodied. and I am ready to chase the Ten of Pentacles.
I know that's right. So what was your morning ritual this morning?
Well, I have a morning ritual that I do every morning. And so I start off by giving thanks and gratitude to, you know, my higher self, my soul, my intuition, my psychic abilities, healing abilities, magic abilities, my star family, soul family, guides, ancestors, angels, and God. And then after giving thanks and gratitude, I also list some other things that I'm grateful for. And then I move into some protection where I receive light from the cosmos that fills my aura, chakras, and body with love, light, and protection. I stand inside a Merkaba, which gives me another layer of protection and also balances my masculine and feminine energies and keeping them in balance. And then I also install a protection rose and attach it to the outer layer of my aura so that I have another layer of protection. And so I do those protections, and then I do a little bit of grounding. So I do some grounding work where I ground into the earth, bond with Mother Nature for a little bit. And then after that, I do a cleansing where I'm removing energy that's not mine, or stuck or stagnant energy, energy not in the present time, and removing some low vibrational energies and emotions like negativity and fear and doubt, shame, guilt, you know, all those kind of things, expectations, limitations, limiting beliefs. Just remove all those out and wash in what's needed. Then I add another little layer of protection where I get three bubbles from Gaia, a purple, pink, and a white bubble that is 6 feet, 4 feet, and 2 feet around me in all directions. And I put certain things in the bubbles, things that are important to me. So for example, in my pink bubble is unconditional love, self-love, compassion, empathy, kindness, caring, those type of things. And then after the bubbles are established, I then say, you know, that frequencies of love or higher can penetrate through those bubbles and get to me, but anything below the frequency of love can't penetrate the bubbles, can't get to me, and bounces back to sender and source. And so then after that, I do some affirmations. I have some affirmations that ring true for me, and so I do those. After my affirmations, I do a manifestation ritual where I am calling in certain things that I'm looking and trying to manifest. And then after that, I just kind of end with some alternate nostril breathing. It's a great activity that just helps clear the brain and get things moving in the right direction.
Yeah. And how long is your morning ritual? How long does all that take for the folks that may be wondering?
You know, it sounds complicated and it sounds like it'll take a long time, but I can usually get through it. If I'm rushing, I can get through it in 10 minutes, 15 at the most.
And at this point, at this stage where you are, what has ritual taught you so far?
It's given me focus. It's also taught me some respect. Taught me to show even more gratitude. And it's taught me about setting intention and then carrying out that intention. Versus just saying, this is what I want, but then your actions are completely opposite of what you're saying you want. And so my rituals have helped me say, this is what I want, and then carry the actions out to equate to that.
And is that what you mean when you talk about one of the things it's teaching you is respect? What do you mean by that?
Well, through these rituals, I'm, you know, talking to not only God, but other angels and other spirits. And I think it's important that you have to honor them and show them respect, especially if you're going to ask them for help in achieving something. Then you've got to be able to respect them and where they're coming from and what their purpose and angle is.
Yeah. So if you think about who you are now versus, you know, we go backwards so that we can come back forwards. When we think about the younger Jeff and you think about spirituality, religion, what was your relationship to that?
Well, I was brought up in the church, in the Free Will Baptist Church in the South. And, you know, my family was, if the church doors were open, we were there. Mm-hmm. So we were there all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's all I knew. So I was very religious. I enjoyed being at church, that kind of thing. As I become a teenager, then that's where things started struggling for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you had touched on this before, I was abused as a child. When I was 5, I was having sex with a male cousin that was 8 years older than I was. And, you know, that was something that was a secret. It was always a secret. Nobody ever found out about that. And after I became a teenager, then I started struggling with, is this who I am? Is this the abuse? You know, being gay is a sin. I'm going to go to hell. And, you know, why would God do this to me? And, you know, and the struggle just continued. I became very good at pushing away what I didn't want to talk about, what I didn't want to deal with, and sank it into food, gained a lot of weight. And so I looked happy on the outside. Mm. And, but, you know, religion really caused me to struggle with my identity and my sexuality and everything.
Mm-hmm. When do you think you started to sort of unravel these different ideas and contradictions and expectations and all of those things? When do you think were you starting to pull those things apart when in your teens?
I don't think so. I don't think I started doing that till I went off to college. And mm-hmm. even then I didn't do it enough. So I think that it really started happening after my son was born. Uh-huh. My wife was going through postpartum depression. She and I lived in Nashville, Tennessee at the time, and all of our family was in North Carolina. So she took the baby and went back to North Carolina, and I stayed in Tennessee and worked. And I didn't know anybody in Nashville, Tennessee. So it was just my people I worked with. And so mm-hmm. I would go home and not have anybody at home. And so then I started being faced with dealing with wow. all the things that I've pushed aside for all the decades. So, yeah.
Things started to move themselves away.
Yeah. And then I went to go see a therapist and, mm-hmm. You know, and the best thing that the therapist told me was that if you're here for me to make you straight or make you gay or make you something, then I'm not your person because I can't do that. And I told him, I said, I'm not here for you to make me anything. I'm here for you to help me get clear on what I am so that once I can identify with what I am, then I can make the right choices on how to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like that tunnel feeling, like you're walking down a dark tunnel. And sometimes we need that, you know,
right?
Somebody to like guide us out of that tunnel. And isn't it funny that now you're becoming the tunnel person, the person sort of at the end of the tunnel? And so, yeah, so we'll talk about that a little bit a little bit later. One of the things that we talked about before was you coming out as an adult and sort of the grief around that, and then the ultimate freedom. So what was that process like for you and your family?
Yeah, so when I came out, the first person I had to come out to was my wife. And so that was very difficult. And, you know, the extra challenging thing of that is that her father was gay and did the same thing to her mother. So after having kids, came out and got a divorce. So, you know, it was even an extra sting during that process because of that. And then I had to come out to my parents because, you know, my wife said, if you don't tell them, I'm telling them. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to be the one to tell them. And so I told my parents, and I actually told my parents about the abuse at that point in time. And, you know, and I asked them to keep that to themselves, which I knew they wouldn't have a problem doing. And after that, it just became easier. It was like a burden was lifted off my shoulders. And I came out to a friend after that, and her response to me was, well, how do you know you're gay? And I said, well, how do you know you're straight? And she said, good point. And that was the end of the conversation. We didn't have to go any further. And so, you know, there's been times where it's pronoun switching and all those kind of things because you don't feel like you're in a safe environment. You know, and this was way before gay marriage was even legal and all this. So, yeah, I mean, it was challenging times. I've been walking in Atlanta holding hands with my partner and somebody throw out something from their window and call us faggots and throw stuff at us. You know, so it's been a challenging time, but it gets easier and easier with each year.
Yeah. And do you sort of have an idea around when things started to get easier, how your life might have changed?
Yeah, so about a year after coming out, I ended up getting a job in San Francisco. And so I moved to San Francisco, and like, it's one of the gayest places in the country. And I lived right in the Castro, which is the gay part of San Francisco. Yeah. And so being in San Francisco just opened everything for me. I mean, it opened my eyes, it opened my heart. It was just so easy to be gay in that environment and nobody care. And so that became very liberating and freeing to me because then it was, I get to be me.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about whether the person sitting next to me on the train is concerned about it or not. I just get to be me.
Yeah.
And so that was very liberating and very opening. And after that, I refused to go back into the closet and said, I don't care if it costs me a job. I don't care if it costs me whatever. This is me. And you either accept me or you can go the hell on because I don't need you in my life.
Yeah. And that's when you said that the first time, it's kind of like a layer coming off, right?
Right.
And then you step into the spiritual space and that's another layer. But before we get to that, so how did you know you want to work with the LGBTQ plus community? Like, when did you make that decision?
And that was about the time of the, well, so I will say that in 2014, I met someone. I was living in Dallas, Texas, and he lived in New York. And so at the end of 2014, in December, I moved to New York. And sometime in towards the end of 2015, we moved to White Plains, New York. And so I started at that point attending events at The Loft, which is the LGBT center in White Plains or Westchester County, New York. Mm-hmm. And so I started getting involved and I became a facilitator for the men's group. My partner and I created a veg out group for vegetarians or vegans. And so I started volunteering and doing things in that nature. And then Black Panther came out and my partner and I and a couple of friends went to go see it. And as we're leaving the movie theater, I was like, you know, we need more gay representation in mainstream movies, in mainstream media. So especially like in the, you know, comic hero type stuff, you just didn't have any gay characters to represent yourself. And so I was like, what can we do to change that? And so that conversation was the beginning of Queery.
That's so interesting. So what was it about Black Panther that made you have that thought? Was it the Black representation so on display? Was it Black superheroes that you saw? Was it something that you've always been feeling and something clicked for you? Like what sparked that thought?
Yeah, so I think that I think it's a little bit of everything. So I think that after walking out of the movie, you know, we're talking about the fact that, yay, it's great that we finally have a Black superhero. Mm. And so we're getting more color representation. But what we're not getting is same-sex representation. Mm-hmm. And so let's get that queer representation. And just for all the listeners, I use queer as the umbrella term for everybody in the LGBTQ community. And I hope that that doesn't offend anyone. But if we can get that queer representation, that's what the piece that was lacking for me. It's like, okay, we're getting there for the color. Now let's add some queerness to it. And then, you know, let's do some cross boundaries and have queer, you know, people of color that are queer in the mainstream, and let's, you know, start doing all these multiple intersections.
Got
that
it.
We don't just have to be the straight white man and the straight white women. We can be everything.
Got it. And so what was the response to that?
So it was very good. We started out creating a couple of cartoons. I think one of the examples was like a screwdriver, flathead versus Phillip head. And why do you have to be one versus the other? Can't you be both and accomplish the same thing? And that, you know, went over okay. And then for our first project of Queery, we created Rhombuses, which is pictures and letters combined to come up with a term. And so our first project was called Sticks and Stones, where we used derogatory terms of things that people call people in the LGBTQ community and saying that we're reclaiming these words and you can no longer use these words to hurt us because we're reclaiming them and saying we're proud to be whatever this is. And so one of our terms was a picture of a home and the letter O beside it, home, O, homo. And so homo was one of the terms, and we're saying, okay, you can call me a homo. I'm proud to be a homo. And so that went over very well. We did that for a year. We did get a little bit of pushback on it because, you know, some of those terms have a lot of pain for a lot of people. And so, you know, those terms could be trigger warnings for certain people within the community. And, you know, and we always try to warn people ahead of time what they were getting into and all that, so that they, you know, if they didn't want to experience the trigger, they didn't have to. But then we started doing things like pronoun projects, and we've created a deck of cards called Queerphoria for affirmations, where there's 31 different affirmations. So you have one for each day of the month. And, you know, we have programs where we do meditation called Queer Zen. We have a book club that we do as well. And that's just ways to get engagement in the queer community and using the arts to do that, which is what Query is, how Query was founded.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you, the way you're telling it, it's like had the idea, went to the movies, got inspired, started Query, immediately started campaigns. But it couldn't have been that simple. Like,
not immediate, no.
What did it take to build that? Like, how did you know what you wanted to talk about? What were those early sort of actions?
Well, you know, we kind of just fell into our first project. And that there was three main people that were started Query, and the three of us were on a weekend getaway, and we stopped into New Paltz, North New York, and went in one of the art stores in there. And our artist saw a picture in there that inspired him. And didn't talk to the other two of us.
Okay.
Created a spec of one of the terms and then pitched the project and said this is something that we could do. And we liked it and we moved forward with it. And that's how we did our first project.
Wow.
The other projects that we've done, for the most part, we did a little bit more planning on those and said, this is what we want to try to achieve and here's how we want to achieve it and all that. The exception to that would be our Queryphoria cards, where we actually had an artist come to us and say, this is what I want to do. And so we were like, we're on board. Let's do it.
Got it. And did you all, the first one makes perfect sense. Kind of, you just kind of fell into the idea and you loved it. And then you got more intentional. How did you get into the community?
The Loft helped us do that.
Okay.
So being part of the Loft, we were able to tap into some of their constituents as well.
Okay.
Social media, contacts that we had as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the founders of Query had a lot of nonprofit work experience. Mm-hmm. And tapped into some of that. And meaning, like, for example, the way you and I met, he had a contact with someone with the state domestic violence organization called NISCative. And we came and did a presentation at their annual conference where we met you, where we started bringing about LGBT terms and talkings in domestic violence, because it's a fragment of the population of domestic violence as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And and so you all just basically, so just wanting to point out steps for people, right, who are going to listen to this, who may have an idea about something they want to create and they don't sort of know the steps. If you think about what you learned from that process or what you're still learning from that process, what would it be?
I would say get yourself organized legally from a corporation standpoint, regardless of whether you're going to do a nonprofit or you're going to do a regular corporation.
Mm.
But go ahead and establish yourself up front as a corporation in whatever path you're going to go down. Establish yourself as that corporation. Make sure you have all the paperwork, all the tax forms filled out. You get your EIN number, all that good stuff, set up a bank account. Because it's better to have it done up front. And then instead of, oh, wait, I need to get this done because I have this contract that they want me to sign and I need my business set up.
Yeah.
You know, you to have that all done up front instead of, you know, waiting till the last minute when you go, oh, my God, I got to have it now.
Yeah.
So I would say that's definitely a key piece in that. The other piece is remain flexible, because you might have a vision in your head about how you want something to play out and carry out. And as you get involved in doing it, things may change and it may, either your opinion may change on how you want it to come into the group. And so you should be open to that. Or circumstances may just dictate a change and you just have to accept that. So if you're stuck and have the blinders on and you can only see it this one way, then that's going to be challenging for you because life just doesn't work that way all the time.
Absolutely. And I feel like that brings us right back to the reading at the beginning of the interview, like being at the crossroads and, you know, which direction are you going to take this? Which way are you going to go? So on this thing of flexibility, how do we get from the Jeff who is very much in the world of the material, you know, getting paperwork together, starting a business, doing all of these things? How do we get from that Jeff to this Jeff that I'm talking to in May 2025? Drink something, people.
So
stay hydrated.
So I guess I started my spiritual path because I took a course from Zoe on how to read tarot cards. And I would say that would have been in the
2023, March.
Yeah, March of 2023, we took a tarot class on how to read tarot cards.
Yeah.
And I will say I went through the whole course and I can do tarot cards, but it's not my strong suit.
Yeah.
Oracle cards.
Thanks.
That's what resonates with my heart.
Took Zoe's class and decided no.
But I have an appreciation for tarot, but oracle cards really touch my heart more. But after taking that course, I mean, I was hooked.
Yeah.
It was like, I just bought right into the lifestyle and I immediately started doing my own research and jumping into things online and finding other healers and card readers and channelers and having, you know, sessions with them or taking a course from them. And then the fall of 2023, invited Zoe to go to Fire Island with us for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And
out of the blue, we might add.
And
out of the blue. Because I don't think we had spoken to each other in a couple months, right?
Yeah, it had been a while we had spoken to each other. Yeah. And
and you sent me a text.
And I got this opportunity. Yeah, I got an opportunity to go to Fire Island because of a friend who owned a house there who's like, hey, y'all can have this for the weekend.
Right.
So I'm like, Zoe, come.
And I was like, what am I coming for? We haven't spoken. What's going on? It was so funny. So then I get there and it's a dream. And I'm like, so why am I here? And you were like, yes.
And so I was like, well, I need some guidance. I need some help. What do I do?
I want to do some spiritual stuff, but I want to back up to the lifestyle. Because that's something interesting. You came to a tarot class and you fell in love with the lifestyle. I feel like, what does that mean?
So when I say the lifestyle, I'm talking about the whole spirituality. So, you know, I stopped going to church, so religion wasn't a thing for me. Mm-hmm. And this kind of brought me back into my spirituality.
Yes.
And I'm very spiritual now, but I'm not very religious, but I'm still very spiritual. And it helped me to redefine my beliefs.
Right, because there's different ways of worshiping and different things to worship,
right?
Outside of the Christianity that we grew up with.
Yes.
And love, you know, by the way, I loved it until I started learning.
Yeah. and I loved it till I kept going to church and being told I was going to go to hell.
Right.
For existing.
Yes.
And, so there's that, but it helped me to really redefine what I believe in.
Yeah.
What's important to me.
Mm.
And what I'm willing to sacrifice and what I'm not willing to sacrifice, or what's important to me. And, you know, throughout my life, I was always sacrificing me to help everybody else. And, you know, this process and this lifestyle helped me to realize I can't sacrifice me to help someone else. I've got to keep me intact and then help other people.
Period. And I'm curious about, like, when you were saying, like, how, when you were sacrificing people before, did you, like, have this little gnawing? Did you hear voices? Did you, like, hear anything that was like, there has to be something better than this?
I think I had those thoughts.
Yeah.
And I think before I just ignored them and pushed them away. But it wasn't until, you know, jumping into this lifestyle that I started saying, oh, wait, that's coming to me for a reason. Why is that coming to me?
Right.
And then, you know, sitting down and listening to it and thinking about it and meditating over it and things that I thought I would never do in my life. Meditation, no way.
You know, real? Now
I enjoy meditation. I even lead meditations.
Yeah.
So.
So many things, so yeah, I mean, yeah, that you do now.
Yeah,
you did before. Yeah, it is. I just think that's so important to stress that it is a way of being. It is, if you take it seriously. I mean, whatever. Like, if you are in the whatever it is we're doing it full on, and so that means doing a lot of things that you never thought that you would do or that you even ever thought about. And in order to sort of live this other life that you may or may not know about, and we know that comes with a cost. So what did you have to say no to in order to say yes to this new iteration?
Well, I had to go through a divorce. And say no to that and say no that this is not working for me. This is not who I am. And I need to stop sacrificing me. And so I went through a divorce. I also relocated from New York to North Carolina. So I think that, you know, I've made some major changes in my life, and it's not because I was necessarily unhappy, but it was because this is what I was led to know, and this is what's right for me.
Yeah.
You know, last summer, my father fell, passed out twice, one time broke a vertebrae when he fell. And then I lost a cousin to cancer, a cousin who, you know, had babysat me when I was young, who was kind of like a second mother to me growing up. In high school, I would go and spend time with her and her husband when I needed to get away. And she passed away of cancer. And while I was home for the funeral, God spoke to me and said, it's time for you to come home. And so that's why I relocated to North Carolina. But, you know, it was a spiritual calling, and I had to leave New York, which I love, you know, to do that. And so I sacrificed the place. I sacrificed the marriage. And I'm totally better off for it. Not complaining at all. But just answering the questions of it does come in sacrifices.
Absolutely. And
that doesn't mean, just for anyone listening, that doesn't mean that just because you're going down the spiritual path that you're going to get a divorce or have to relocate. That's just what happened for me.
Yes.
And everybody's journey is their own.
Yeah. That's important to state. And I think it's also important to state that this all has happened within the past year.
Correct.
And almost a half, but not quite.
Not quite. Yeah.
Not quite. So you have gone through some significant changes to get to where you are. And, you know, I think that this Ace of Pentacles is a nice way to, you know, open up this conversation, given all of the things that you've sacrificed, right? And so it's like, oh yes, well, let's welcome in that Ace of Pentacles energy, right?
Yes.
And maybe this conversation is us walking through, you know, Pentacles 2 through 9. Perhaps that's where you're at now, is at the 9. Who knows? We'll see. One would hope. So,
yes.
So in conversation about thinking about what you're moving towards, one of the things that I've heard you say is that you are wanting to help the LGBTQ+ community ascend. Say more about what that looks like. You've shared with us your ritual, sort of how you got to where you are now. So what are you seeing when working with your community?
Yeah, so I think that my divine purpose is like you said, to help LGBTQ folks ascend to the fifth dimension. And I, you know, we're in that process now. We're trying to move from the 3D to the 5D. And in doing that, you know, I think that I still am working on the how. So that's not, you know, firmed up for me, but there's many different ways that I know I can help. And that is, I can do oracle readings. I can do sound baths. I can do Reiki. I'm also a medical intuitive. I can read energy. And so in doing those things, I can help individuals. And eventually I'm working on something where I can start helping a more massive group instead of just one person at a time. But I'm not sure exactly how that's looking like yet, but I'm in the development stages of that. Mm-hmm. And so share more about that once I'm ready.
Sure. Absolutely. And what is your understanding of going from the 3D to the 5D?
It's one of those things where we're raising our vibration. We are accepting our divinity more. With our divinity, we have different gifts and abilities, such as the clairs, so clairvoyant for vision, clairaudience for hearing, clairsentience for feeling, claircognizance for knowing. You know, we all have these gifts. It's just a matter not of whether we can attune to them or not.
Yeah.
And so I think tapping into those, knowing that there's other beings besides earthly beings, and besides angels, and working with those beings to help us to achieve the right vibration, the right technology. You know, I think it's pretty obvious that we've had outside influences on this earth by looking at pyramids and things of that nature that just seem impossible to have been done by humankind alone.
Yeah.
So it's bringing those beings back onto the planet and helping, getting them to help us to where we need to be.
Yeah. Mm. That would be nice. It would be nice, you know, have some help. They're helping, but more obvious. But we would have to be ready for that.
Correct. Yes.
As we are working toward.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we know what your work is. We know what you're walking toward. How can folks assist you, assist your work, support you?
Well, they can get readings from me. If you need some, if you or your organization want like a sound bath, you can contact me. We can set something up for a sound bath. It can be local, meaning in person, but it can also be done over Zoom. So any of the services, you can book services. Once I start my new program, you can help get the word out. I am in the process now of trying to create some communities on social media. So once I have those communities created, I will share links and
great.
You can follow and subscribe. I'm in the process of recording some of my meditations. I'm going to post those on YouTube.
Nice.
I'm also generating a website that'll have a lot of this information on it as well. So, you know, I'm still in the works.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things, gave you the advice about taking care of your business stuff first, because you don't want to be where you're at, where you have to take care of it. But, you know,
yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And what would you, when we think about grief, when we think about loss, when we think about sacrifice, what would you want people to know about that?
We all have grief, and we're all going to lose things, whether we choose to lose them or they choose to separate from us. And it's okay to have that grief. You can feel that grief. What most of us do is we tend to bottle up our emotions and we don't feel them. And that's what causes blocks. So my opinion and thoughts to you would be to feel that grief, bring it into your heart, let you feel it, live in it for a day, 2 days, however long it takes you, until it's ready to move out. Don't dwell in the grief and say you're always going to be grieving, but process the grieving and feel it and let it move on. That's what we're supposed to do with our emotions, is process them and let them move on and not live in them. We, you know, it takes the bad thoughts as well as the good thoughts to get us by.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we're not dwelling on the bad thoughts and we're just experiencing them and thinking them and saying, okay, now that's not rational and I don't want to live there, let's move forward.
It just makes me think about the processing and our spiritual tools. And perhaps that is the main goal of our spiritual practices, is to help us process better, not to, you know, get the things, but to help us process these heavy emotions. Yeah, so that they don't turn into blocks. I love it. Jeff, well, thank you again. Thank you for speaking up. Thank you for everything that you've shared today and for the examples that you gave us, number one, of your ritual that is beautiful and extensive and can be done in under 15 minutes or, you know, or maybe a little bit more. And again, stepping into the spiritual community fully and completely. And so that takes courage and vulnerability. So yeah, thank you for sharing. So yes. So next time on Come to the Brink, we are going to be diving into another powerful story. This one having to do with reconnection to nature. So I'm going to be talking with a woman, the founder of Lightning Struck Gardens, who survived a mass shooting and transformed her trauma by planting seeds of hope. So she shares how gardening and plant medicine has helped her reclaim her life, and how reconnecting with the earth is guiding other survivors to healing too. So I'm super excited for that conversation. And thank you all for listening again, for subscribing, for sending me DMs and texts saying how much you appreciate the podcast. So, you know, please keep listening. Episodes drop every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Bonus episodes drop on Fridays. And of course, you find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple, all of the things. And remember, if anything that you heard today moved you in any way, reach out to me, send me a DM. Your story might get posted in the show notes or could even result in an interview. So yeah, reach out, because as I always say, none of us should be standing on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I will see you soon. Bye.